By a show of hands, who likes to be interrupted? Do you enjoy being interrupted? Yeah, doesn't it depend on what it is exactly that we're doing? If we're doing the laundry or doing some house chores or whatever the case might be, perhaps we want to get interrupted. But by and large, most of the time, I don't appreciate it. Probably you don't either. Some of our personalities are such, though, that we don't multitask that well. And so those of us who are point A to point B, before we go to point C, whichever side of the brain that is, we don't deal well with those interruptions, because we get up in the morning and we start our list off of things that have to be done, and as soon as we get the first deviation from that path, we get frustrated. Are any of you like that? Maybe? Pointing to Gene, are you? Well, you know, sometimes, a lot of times, most of the time, when we're out in the world, those interruptions are going to tell a lot of other people who we are, what we're like, whether or not we have a caring and giving spirit. And I guess if there's any group of, or think of, can you give me an occupation in which interruptions are part of the job description? Pardon? A doctor?
Being a mom.
What? A fireman?
Secretary.
A mom. Yes, being a mom. That was the one I was looking for, Tracy. Thank you very much. Because I guess if we all have in our mind an idea of what the preacher should be, right? And we think that when we throw our check into the collection plate, we're paying for him to come to the building, study his lesson, and knock us off of our feet on Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesdays perhaps. But how much of a preacher's life is really like that? Because when someone passes away, where do we expect the preacher to be? When someone's in the hospital, where do we expect the preacher to be? When someone needs to just ask a Bible question, where do we expect the preacher to be? Perhaps we should call the elders on those, but I bet most of us pick the phone up and call the preacher first, don't we?
I do.
But tonight, we've got either five or six, I don't really remember how many are in my notes right now, situations in which Jesus went about his life and was interrupted, and how he dealt with those interruptions. And what we're trying to learn from that is how we as Christians in our daily walk should also deal with interruptions and those that are around us that are that perhaps are not expecting to see Jesus in us, but that's what we should be wanting to portray to them. We're going to look at Mark and those particular scriptures. You can turn to the first chapter and we'll look at that. We're going to pretty much stay in Mark most of the evening, starting with Mark chapter 1, verse 10. And immediately, and there is a key word in these scriptures that are up here on the board. See if you can figure out what the word is. And if you're right, when I get through reading these, there will be a prize. Mark chapter 1, verse 10. And immediately, coming up out of the water, he saw the heavens opened and the Spirit like a dove descending upon him. Verse 12. And immediately, the Spirit drove him into the wilderness. Verse 18. And immediately they left their nets and followed him. Verse 20. And immediately he called them. And they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired servants and went after him. Verse 21. And they went into Capernaum. And immediately on the Sabbath day he entered into the synagogue and taught. Verse 28. And immediately his fame went into all the Galilean neighborhood. Verse 29. And immediately after they had come out of the synagogue, they entered into the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Verse 30. But Simon's wife's mother lay sick of a fever, and immediately they told him about her. What's the key word? 40 plus times, and I put the plus up there. The author that I took this from said 42, but I hesitate to quote those exact numbers sometimes when I don't verify them. But 40 plus times in the book of Mark, Mark uses the term immediately, illustrating to us just exactly how busy Jesus' life was. How many hours a day do you think Jesus kept on his BlackBerry or his iPod or his pocket calendar of appointments that he had to keep? Do you think he had an 8-hour day? I kind of doubt it. I don't know that it's told, but we've seen occasions where he worked from sunup to sundown and beyond, certainly. It's a pretty busy schedule. And it was a schedule that was full of interruptions. If you had to classify Jesus' job as something, what would you call it? Pardon? Demanding? All right, but give me a job classification, I guess.
Itinerant preacher.
Joe says itinerant preacher.
Teacher.
Marion says teacher.
Doctor.
Doctor. Yes. I couldn't hear, and somebody help me.
Minister.
Minister. Absolutely.
That's carpenter.
A carpenter. Yeah, let's restrict it to the public ministry part. Probably put down the hammer and chisel at that point, but maintained at least a working knowledge of the craft. Something else?
Servant.
Servant.
Comforter.
Comforter.
Healer.
Healer.
Teacher.
How many of these things require just an hour or two a day and are pretty much free of interruptions? Start a job and get finished with a job. He was all of these things. And anybody that has a job like that is going to be pretty busy. First and foremost, he was a servant. Lump everything else that we call off for a job description into that category of servant. And if you're going to be a servant, how much of the day are you hopping? You go to a restaurant, somebody's waiting on your table. Are they still? Do they not move around? Or are they going from place to place to place to place? Now, you may think they're not doing anything because you need a refill on the iced tea when they have 6 or 7 more tables perhaps than what they should have and they don't ever get back around to you. But if we're a servant, we're doing something for somebody all the time. Mark chapter 1, verse 35. Jesus was looking for some solitude. And rising up quite early in the night, he went out and went away into a deserted place, and he was praying there. And Simon and those with him searched for him. And finding him, they said to him, "All are seeking you." And he said to them, "Let us go into the next town that I may proclaim there also, for that reason I come forth." Why did Jesus go out? He wanted a little peace and quiet, did he not? Have you ever been like that? You wanted just a little bit of quiet time by yourself. You needed to just, what do we call it? Recharging the battery time. And then when we get there, somebody comes to find us and interrupt us. Yeah, good old Peter. Well, what did Jesus say to Peter? Jesus was off trying to find some solitude. Peter comes up and says, "Where have you been? We have been looking everywhere for you. We have been searching for you. Everybody's looking for you." Jesus didn't go off to be with the crowds right that minute. He went off to find a little quiet time. How did Jesus answer the question? He got up and said, "Okay, let's go. I got work to do. That's what I'm here for. It's my job. And off he went. Number two, or episode number two, or lesson number two, or point number two. Mark chapter 2, verse 1. Whoops. Teaching a lesson. And again he entered into Capernaum after some days, and it was heard that he was in a house. And immediately many were gathered, so that none any longer had room, even to the door, and he proclaimed the word to them. Then they came to him, bringing one who was paralyzed, who was carried by four. When they could not come near to him because of the crowd, they unroofed the roof where he was, and digging through, they let down the cot on which the paralytic was lying. And seeing their faith, Jesus said to the paralytic, "Child, your sins are forgiven you." What was Jesus doing at the house first? He was teaching, right? Crowd got thick. They wanted to hear what he was saying. And I'm sure he had powerful words. He was, after all, Jesus. How do teachers feel when you've got something you really want to deliver and you spend hours and hours and hours working on that to get exactly the right words, and you get just to the crescendo of the lesson and something happens?
Frustrated.
Spoken from a teacher, right?
Power goes out.
Power goes out. Or some little rugrat ask an inane question, you know. Or whatever the case might be. My mom taught second grade for 112 years. You know. Did you hear me, Mother? Okay, good. But you get interrupted in those kind of things and you just get frustrated and you want to go and do something else, or you want to scream at somebody. What did Jesus do in this particular circumstance? He stopped and he healed the man. What's more important, the lesson spoken or the lesson applied? Now, the rest of the story on this particular scripture is, you know, the scribes and the Pharisees that were there, they took him to task because they wanted to know who it was, who was he that he had reason, that he could forgive sins. And so he made a little extra lesson out of that. So he went to the house, he was teaching a lesson. The man was let down through the roof, he applied the lesson. Then the scribes got after him, and he taught a second lesson. Because he said, "Well, okay, what would you rather me have said here, people? Take up your cot and walk? Okay, fine. Take up your cot and walk." And off the man went. Not skipping a beat, not letting anything happen, but rather dealt with that situation, took care of the interruption, healed the man, dealt with the scribes and Pharisees, and kept right on going. You know, people are watching us in our daily lives, and they know that we're Christians, and they're looking to see how we act in a lot of different circumstances. And it took me a long time to understand that concept, you know, that it's all in a day's work, or it all pays the same, or however you want to look at it, Tracy. Which is the whole point of this lesson, actually, and the last slide, I guess. But that's okay. We can do the conclusion now, and then we'll come back to it. Because by the time I get there, nobody will remember what we talked about at this point anyway. But that is what the point is it not? Things that we see as just getting in our way are opportunities that we need to deal with. Dirk? Entrapment? Well, and since you brought that up here, we'll go ahead and get to one of those other last slides I've got. No, that's all right. That's fine. I'm just getting increasingly frustrated because you're taking all my points.
Being interrupted.
Yeah, time and time again. Jesus dealt with two types of interruptions. And those interruptions of criticisms, which is what this might have been or was the second interruption. he dealt with and then he dispatched. He didn't spend a lot of time on them. He took them, here they are, fix it, go forward. And the other type of interruption, the interruption of faith, he spent the time with. And so in this particular circumstance, an interruption of faith started this whole event going when the man was let down through the roof. He dealt with that. Then he got the interruption of criticism. He pretty much shut them down pretty quickly. Did he do it? I think we can answer yes, because he was smarter than they were. He knew that they were there to try to entrap him, and he knew how to get out of it, which he did. And then he went back and dealt with the faith issue.
He knew what their hearts were before they even let the man down through the roof.
Yes. Exactly. All right, third episode. This one's a little more obtuse. Mark chapter 3. I threw it in there, though, because it had to do with sitting down to eat a meal. Mark chapter 3, verse 20. And again a crowd came together so that they could not even eat bread. And hearing those with him went out to take hold of him, for they said he is insane. And then if you jump down to verse 31, we've got the situation where his mother and his brothers came in order to try to take him back, and because they thought he'd lost his mind. And he said, well, who is my brother's mother? Who are my brother's mother, sister, and my family? Who is my family if not those that are here doing God's work? But this shows the hecticness, if that's a word, of Jesus' life, as he could not even, especially during the earlier parts of his ministry, sit down somewhere in order to have food. Jesus was human like the rest of us. He got hungry like the rest of us. How cranky do you get when you're hungry, when you sit down at the table and hurricane shutters are us call you on the phone? Have you ever slammed the phone down on one of those poor defenseless telephone operators? Yes, I have too. And I always hope that one of those telephone operators didn't happen to come into church the next Sunday, respond to the invitation, and then write on their little card, "I'm a telephone operator for, you know." That wouldn't be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yet things happen all the time. When we don't want them to happen, they still happen. Yes, Papa.
Let's tell them a parable.
Make a life lesson out of it?
Yes.
I know my kids hated it when I made one of those life lessons. Something was going along and there'd be an interruption, and I'd say, you know, that reminds me of the time when just eyes would start rolling and everything else. But it's pretty effective teaching technique. Seeking some rest. Chapter 4, verse 35. And evening having come, he said to them, on that day, let us pass over to the other side. And when they had sent away the crowd, they took him with them as he was in the boat. There were also other little boats with him. And there arose a windstorm, and the waves beat into the boat so that it was now full. And he was in the stern of the boat, asleep on a headrest. And they awakened him, and they said to him, Master, do you not care that we perish? And he awakened, and he rebuked the wind, and said to the sea, Peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was great calm. And then he said to them, Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And they feared exceedingly, and said to one another, What kind of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him? How happy are you when you get woken up? Now, I'm a perky type person when I get woken up. Debbie, on the other hand, is not. And you can tell her I said that because we have several discussions about it. She does not like to be woken up, regardless of what hour it is. How do you feel when you get woken up? What had Jesus done on this particular day? What was before? Speak up, Jackie. What? All day. He had been preaching all day. People following him around. People pressing in on him. He was doing his job. He was serving. He was preaching. He was teaching. He was healing, etc., and so on. He was exhausted. And he got in the boat. And he got woken up. And what did he do? You know, what would you have done? Would you have said, forget you guys. Jump overboard. I'm not dealing with this. I'm tired. I'm asleep. Who was in the boat with him, by the way? List off some people that would have been in the boat. Were there any fishermen in the boat, potentially? Were they on a body of water that they had been on before? Do you think they knew how to deal with the sudden storms that came up on the Sea of Galilee? Do you know anything about the topography of the Sea of Galilee? Do you know why it's so stormy sometimes? There's mountains on three sides. Mountains, and I don't remember whether it's the east or the west side that has the taller peaks, but up to 2,000 feet on one side. And what happens when cold air comes in over the top of the mountains and then it comes down and then it hits hot water or warmer water? Some pretty violent storms. And so it was prone to do that. And these guys fished there for a living and then got so scared that they couldn't deal with it. So either it was a very rough and difficult storm, or, as Jesus said, oh, ye of little faith, they just didn't have much faith that particular night. But whatever the case was, Jesus simply dealt with it and went on about his business. Chapter 5, preparing to speak. Now this has got a lot in it. This is a pretty important, a powerful example of Jesus' interruptions and how he dealt with them. Starting with verse 21, and Jesus, having crossed again by boat to the other side, a large crowd collected on him, and he was near the sea. And behold, one of the synagogue rulers came, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet. And he begged him greatly, saying, my little daughter lies at the point of death. Come lay your hands on her so that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and many people followed him and thronged him. Now stop there for just a second. How important was this to Jairus? What was at stake? His daughter's life. If there was anything more critical to Jairus at this particular moment, I have no idea what it could have been. If Jairus is in the middle of a group of other people, all whom have problems, whom is Jairus convinced of has the biggest problem? It's got to be him, right? Because life is at stake. And not just any life, his daughter's life, his child's life. Jairus is frantic. He's motivated to find Jesus. He's full of faith in that if he finds Jesus, something's going to be done about this problem because his child is sick, very sick. Verse 25. And a certain woman who had an issue of blood 12 years and had suffered many things of many physicians and had spent all that she had and had not been bettered any but rather came to worse. This woman had been to the doctor repeatedly. The doctors had done her no good whatsoever. As a matter of fact, they had made her worse. You ever heard stories like that? I know people today that refuse to go to the doctor. I'm not going to the doctor. They're only going to make me worse. Why would I want to go to the doctor? In this particular case, the doctor really did, or the doctors, plural, really did make this woman worse. Plus, they took all of her money. She didn't have anything left. Having heard about Jesus, she came in the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, if I may but touch only his clothes, I will be cured. And instantly the fountain of her blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And knowing instantly within himself that power had gone out of him, Jesus turned himself around in the press and said, who touched my clothes? What do you think Jairus is thinking right now? Who is Jairus mad at? Yes, he is. Your house is on fire. Your baby's inside. Chuck, what's the response time of the Riviera, or are you county or city?
City.
What's the response time of the Riviera Beach Fire Department?
4 minutes.
4 minutes. Okay. That's an important thing when it comes to police departments, fire departments. There's competitions, are there not? Are there, okay, response time? Competitions. House is on fire. Baby's in the house. 911's been called. 3 minutes and 30 seconds later, you hear the siren. You see it coming over the hill. Suddenly the brakes go on the fire truck. They stop, they unload the ladders, and they get a cat out of a tree. Is that how Jairus felt?
Probably.
Now the woman had serious medical issues. Wasn't exactly analogous to a cat in a tree, but in Jairus' mind it probably was. Because his daughter was sick. Did Jesus know that his daughter was sick? He was going with him to his house, was he not? And he looked around to see who had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had been done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be whole from your plague. While he still spoke, they came from the synagogue ruler's house saying, your daughter is dead. Why do you still trouble the teacher? What did this man want to hear at this point? That certainly wasn't it, was it? What do you think Jairus felt at that point when he found out that his daughter was already dead? Probably about ready to strangle the woman who had the blood infection. She created a problem. He had Jesus. He was coming to my house. She got in the way. She took him away from his appointed task, and now my daughter's dead because of it. You think Jesus knew all that when the woman stopped him? Sure he did. How would this story have played out if Jesus had turned around to that woman and said, sister, I've really got to get over to Jairus' house because his daughter's dying. I can come back and deal with your problem anytime. Would that woman, where would her faith have been right after that? How would she have responded to Jesus when he came back? Because what was the most important issue to her at the point in time she touched Jesus' garment? But hearing the word spoken, Jesus said to the synagogue ruler, do not be afraid, only believe. A double interruption. Of course, the story has a happy ending, does it not? Took care of the woman's blood infection. Took care of Jairus' daughter. Healed two. A double interruption. Last episode. I didn't put the Mark chapter up here because it didn't have within it the point I was trying to get to. But in the 15th chapter of Mark, Jesus is on the cross, and Mark describes the agony that he's in. Where had we been in order to get to that point? Jesus had been rebuked, lied about, taken in front of Pilate, taken to a Roman guard, scourged, beat, thorn of crowns pressed into his head. Someone tried to make him carry a cross. that he was physically unable to do. And then after it was carried for him, he was nailed to it, and it was stood upright in the ground, and he was attached by the hands and by the feet and was in quite a bit of pain. Did the interruption stop for Jesus on that cross? Because who interrupted him while he was hanging there, not feeling too good? People walked by him and ridiculed him still yet. And then the thieves that were on the cross had things to say to him. One of the two ridiculed him some more. And the other one said, wait a minute, I'm not going with him. Can you help me? And Jesus did. Then the scripture that I've got up here on the board from Luke chapter 23, the most telling words of Jesus, I think, in the whole thing. What did Jesus say regarding not only that thief on the cross, but those who had done to him what was being done that particular day? Father, forgive them because they don't know what they're doing. Now, is that the kind of person that we want to be? Or when we get interrupted, do we think that only our goal is the most important one and the other people are the ones who are getting in the way of us finishing whatever it is that our job is? Now, I had a slide up here talking about the interruptions of criticism, interruptions of faith. We'll dispense with that because we've already talked about it. And we'll look at that one last interruption in Mark chapter 13, verse 32. But of that day and hour no one knows, no, not the angels in heaven nor the Son, but the Father. Take heed, watch, and pray, for you do not know when the time is. As a man going away, leaving his house, and giving authority to his servants, and each man's work to him, and commanded the doorkeeper to watch, then you watch, for you do not know when the Lord of the house is coming, of evening, or at midnight, or at the cock crowing, or early, lest he come suddenly and find you sleeping. And what I say to you, I say to all, watch. Now, how we deal with all of life's interruptions are going to dictate how we handle that final interruption. Because our example of Jesus being the ultimate servant is what we're trying to emulate. And our lives are no more busy than his were, not even as much. And our job is certainly not as important as his job was. But we like to think of ourselves as being pretty important characters, and we like to think that when someone pesters us for something, that it's not nearly as important as what we have to do. But I think Jesus looked at it a different way. And if we expect to be the shining example of those around us, to the unchurched, to the others, then we're going to have to deal with life's interruptions as Jesus would have. Questions or comments?